freight trains. Girl, that's how you make me feel sometimes.
What is up, Wisconsin? And you're listening to Raised in Wisco. I'm your host, Joel Clayfish, alongside Danielle Fairman, who is actually not here today. She's at a Ducks Unlimited event, and I think she might even be picking up a couple interviews there, which is fantastic, because what is this show about? Enjoying the great outdoors of the state of Wisconsin. And today, we've got some really fantastic guests along with us, filling in for Danielle as co-hosts. Is that a word? Co-hosts?
I would say so.
I don't think so.
Co-hosts, Jack Klobuchar with the Life Pro staff, and my buddy Ian Kittrell, who is one of my closest hunting buddies. And the reason I've got them on here today is because we literally have we figured out a way, Ian, to drag the goose hunting season out into the middle to the end of February.
We sure did.
I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And I'm going to introduce them right off the bat because we don't have time to waste. This is a very rare treat. We have the president of the Aldo Leopold Foundation, Buddy Huffaker, with us today. And he was out doing a Foul Life podcast. And I literally said, you know how great it would be to have you on Raised in Wisco? We need to get this message out to everybody on the Civic Media Network, Raised in Wisco. Anastasia Esther, our producer, puts it all together and makes us sound as good as she possibly can.
I do my best.
Thank you. Well, believe me, no one needs it more than me, and we appreciate it because now this show is airing Saturdays at 11 a.m. throughout the entire state on every major market from Eau Claire to Wausau to Green Bay, Waukesha, Madison, on anywhere you can get your Civic Media station. So be sure to check it out. Beyond that, you can listen to the podcasts after the show on the Civic Media Facebook page, on Apple Podcasts, just about anywhere you stream, you can hear the show after it airs as well. And that's probably why Raised in Wisco's audience is growing so much throughout the state, because we talk about stuff people actually want to hear, and that's the great outdoors of the state of Wisconsin. We don't fight about it. We're not real political about it, although sometimes we dabble in that area. But, man, you know, and we talk Wisconsin. This is Raised in Wisco. It's about Wisconsin. But one of the fascinating things to me is that when you are waterfowl hunting in Wisconsin, and nobody, very few people in the entire state do it as much as Jack Klobuchar, Ian Kittrell, and me. We're hunting geese or ducks 4 to 5 days out of 7 during the season. I mean, last year I think I hunted 85 out of 90 days during the waterfowl season. And when it closes, we all say, oh my gosh, and it seems like forever, which is crazy because Ian found a way for us, literally found a way for us to continue hunting geese. And what's crazy is we don't get snows in Wisconsin. Now, that's not to say some don't fly through here, but just 4 hours south of here in the middle of Illinois, not on the Mississippi River, not against Lake Michigan, like literally in the middle of the Illinois where they have like thick southern accents for some reason, we went and hunted snow geese. Ian, that was nuts. Like, how did you figure that out and how did that become something we actually did?
So, you know, just like you, Joel, I'm bit by the bug. When it comes to goose hunting,
He's not talking about COVID, folks.
No. I try to extend my goose season and goose hunt as long as I can. And a great opportunity is to go snow goose hunting. Now, unfortunately, in the state of Wisconsin, as you might know, we don't have snow geese. So you'd have to travel. I've been to South Dakota and done that. Been to southern part of Missouri in the Boot Heel and hunted down there. But that's like 7.5, 8, 8.5 hour drive.
Yeah, that's more like 9, 10 hours the way I drive. I drive like a grandma. Do you know that?
I do.
I know Buddy knows that because he followed me over to the station.
I followed you here. I was like, I about gave you a little friendly tap from behind.
I know. Hey, you know what? I'm going to tell you something. If it takes you 10 minutes more to get somewhere, at least you know you're getting there. That's my opinion. Anastasia, I don't know how you feel about that, but I drive like a grandma.
Oh, I haven't seen you drive, so I guess I don't know. I do not drive like a grandma.
No.
I drive like a child. So watch out.
Well, We got there and we hunted with a group of guys. What they were called? Show Me Your Snows.
Yep. Show Me Your Snows.
Riley Ham and his buddy the Wiz. I forgot his real name, but everybody calls him the Wiz because he's a wizard at hunting. And we hunted snow geese. And I think when you have the bug to waterfowl hunt the way we do, you're always looking for ways to extend your season. And we did that in the state line area. Jack Klobuchar's got a real great spot that we finally figured out kind of how to hunt it the best way possible. And something I noticed, the difference from our hunting up here to down there, is they run pit blinds. Now, that's like, that's kind of that totally something I've never done before. You are sitting hunting underground in a cornfield or a bean. We were in a bean field yesterday. Yep. And no joke, you guys, you got to check out my Facebook page. I'm going to post it in the next few days. We had 9,000 full-body decoys. That's not even an exaggeration, is it?
No.
That's nuts.
Insane.
It's absolutely insane. It takes hours and hours to put them out. And snow goose hunting, I did not realize it was going to be so different than Canada goose hunting.
Mm-hmm. They just act completely different than our Canada geese here. They have that safety in numbers mentality. And a lot of people don't know this, but a lot of these birds, these snow geese, the adult geese can be up to 20, 25 years old. So it's just, it makes them very, very difficult to fool in the field.
One thing that was crazy to me is that we've got some friends who are snow goose hunting, and one of them was banded. And the band on this geese proved that that goose was older than you,
yeah,
Ian. Older? And I noticed it had less facial hair, too. So I'm not going to say better looking, but it was definitely older than you. And when you're out there pursuing, as a hunter, pursuing an animal that's older than you, that's kind of, that's just a crazy thing to think about, isn't it?
It is. It's remarkable to think that that bird has traveled from, like, the Arctic Circle to either Arkansas or Louisiana to winter. And has done that trip over 50 times back and forth, all those miles.
You know, the breasts on geese are just pure muscle meat. There's no, that's protein. There's no fat on it. There's nothing. And those, it's so amazing to me to think that they have the power to literally go from the Arctic Circle down to Arkansas or Mexico or wherever they're going. Mm-hmm. And they're doing this twice a year, once down, once back. And while they're doing it, they're stopping to feed and they're going north and south based on weather patterns as well. They might go 100 miles north and fly 100 miles south the next day to get in a warmer climate to eat. And then they're flying again another 100 miles back and 100 miles further. That's just nutty to me.
It is crazy. And the whole entire way, I mean, I can't even imagine how many decoy spreads these birds see and how many times they have been shot at in their lifetime. You know, those older ones that get to be 20 years old.
We were hunting decoy spread that was on, you know, we were hunting like, it's a GHG style. They weren't GHGs, they were hardcores, but they're on a style on a post that sways with the wind. How much do you think it matters if those birds are bouncing in the field to the real birds that are coming in? If the decoys are moving, how much do you think that plays a role in selling to snow geese? Because I feel like after hunting yesterday, we have a hard time sometimes with educated, you know, Canada geese getting them into the spread. But I think it's even harder to get these snows down in front of you because they are lookers. And when you're looking up and there's 300, 400 of them in one blob, that's a lot. That's 600 eyes looking for everything that might be wrong.
Yes. So, yeah, with those rotaries that they had out. So, basically, it
was... Yeah, the helicopter-looking things.
Helicopter goose flags.
That's really what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. And, folks, you got to stick with us through the show because in the third segment, we're going to have an interview with Riley Ham, who is the head, one of the main guides for Show Me Your Snows. And we did a field interview with him and the Wiz and Ian while we were out there, which was actually really cool to do. And Anastasia's good at cleaning up the audio and stuff, so I'm confident it's going to look pretty good or sound pretty good. But stick around for that because in the second segment of the show, we're going to talk with Buddy Huffaker, who is the president of the Aldo Leopold Foundation. We're going to get into some of the misconceptions about conservation organizations and hunting organizations. We're going to talk about what it means to get new hunters into the field. I mean, buddy, I got to tell you, you probably didn't know the ride you were in for today. I asked you to come out and do the Fowl Life podcast. You did that. Now I dragged you over to the station. I mean, how cool to spread the message of Aldo Leopold, one of the founding fathers of conservation and hunting.
Absolutely.
That people don't realize in the state sometimes.
Yeah.
Everybody's heard of Aldo Leopold, but I don't think everybody knows the depth to which he affects what we do here in the outdoors.
And a lot of people read his book and don't even fully realize he's a hunter. So that's part of the message.
Well, I think that's a huge part of the message. I have to be perfectly honest. And, you know, I have seen Aldo Leopold photographs, and he's always kind of portrayed as this pensive, you know, thoughtful person, which is certainly a large portion of the characteristic of who he is. But one thing that is not always portrayed is that he was out there hunting and fishing, and he was the first person, really the godfather, of marrying, taking resources and using them from the field to the table with the concept of conserving those resources and making sure there are enough of them around for people to continue doing that into the future.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of people know of Leopold because of his book, A Sand County Almanac, which, by the way, it's the 75th anniversary of that classic book. But for our conversation here, the really important piece of work that he provided was Game Management, the first book ever written about how to manage for wildlife purposes, 1933. All this hunting we're talking about wouldn't have been possible without the early survey work done by Leopold, sponsored by the sporting ammunitions industry, to ensure that hunting could persist in the future. And what do you got to have wildlife to hunt. So he did the groundbreaking work to help us understand how to manage for wildlife for sustainable populations over the long haul.
When we come back to, we're going to talk about what, why that message, you know, in some generations past, and this is a perfect example. We've got Jack Klobuchar here, who's technically a millennial, on the cusp of millennial and Gen Z, and Ian, who's definitely full-scale in Gen Z. And we're going to come back and we're going to talk about when that was lost and how we're getting it back and why right now is the quintessentially perfect time to marry those things together. You're listening to Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman. We'll be right back after this. Stick around. Gonna be crazy.
Off in the moonlight, a sweet southern moonlight, a beach dog, bare feet in the sand, a counting down the summer days, smiling at our reckless way.
Heads up! Heads up. Here's another one. And
tickets to the Ludacris concert, because you know it's going to be sold out. Sold out. Sold out. Isn't that a line from a Ludacris song, Jack? I think that is, isn't it?
I have no idea.
Okay, well, you were the one who wanted Ludacris coming back.
I love
from the
Luda.
Break. Okay.
I love Luda.
Well, I think that's a line from one of his songs. I mean, that's like 90s stuff. Anya, is that a line from one of his songs? Tickets to the Ludacris concert, because you know it's going to be sold out?
I'd have no way of knowing.
Okay. Well, I don't either.
Different
if
rapper.
If you know, answer on Facebook. Tell me if I'm right or wrong. I'm 52 now, so I'm wrong about a lot of stuff. Welcome back to Raised in Wisco. I'm your host, Joel Clayfish. Danielle Fairman is out tonight with Ducks Unlimited. That's awesome for her. One of the cool things is that we get to fill in for each other, filling in on the co-hosting scene. We got Jack Klobuchar of the Fowl Life Midwest Pro Staff. And my buddy Ian Kittrell, one of the hardest goose and waterfowl hunters I know. And Buddy Huffaker, president of the Aldo Leopold Foundation. When we went into the break, we said we were going to get into why and when and how this break happened. And am I right to say it was probably about 30 years ago, buddy, where all of a sudden those folks who generally called themselves conservationists started not liking hunters, and hunters started judging the people who called themselves conservationists. There was a real schism at some point.
Yeah, I'd probably dial it all the way back to about 1970. with the kind of rise of the environmental movement that was very policy driven, Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act, that kind of stuff. And it brought in new people that were interested in the environment, but didn't have that kind of hunting tradition and that aspect about applied conservation. And things kind of drifted apart. And, you know, hopefully we are kind of bringing those interests back together.
I think that was a major, major malfunction at the time, because we lost many years where we could have seen and been on the same page as folks who are in conservation, because I think there were assumptions that were made that if you're a hunter, if you're an angler, you don't care about clean water and proliferation of species, which is exactly the antithesis of what reality is.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know how we let that happen, but I think it happened from both sides, you know, likewise.
No question. Yeah, it happened both sides.
And so I think what this room knows and the listeners know is that when you get people out in the field and they have that experience hunting, like if they have any interest in the environment, all it does is solidify that and gives them new insights an entree into what conservation should be about.
Jack, I want to ask you this as a person who's kind of on the edge of a millennial slash Gen Z, closer to a millennial. When you were growing up, when you were getting into hunting, did you have this overwhelming perception that there were pro hunter and anti hunter and very little gray area for them to mix in the middle? Or had it kind of gone past that at that point, where, you know, those who like to harvest wild game and organic game are starting to understand more about hunters, and hunters are playing a larger role in the conservation of species? What was your perception growing up? How did you see that as a millennial, someone who's between, you know, 25 and 35 years old?
Yeah, so I definitely grew up, my family's a little split on hunting. I mean, my mom doesn't hunt, but she's not against hunting. My brother grew up around hunting. He's not a not a hunter. So I definitely grew up in a, and I've noticed definitely that there's not as much of a polar difference between non-hunters and hunters. I think there's a lot of mixture in there of people, like, you know, we'll talk about the property we hunt down in Illinois. Huge, used to be a preserve for waterfowl and animals. No one could hunt, you know, now we hunt that. And the owner isn't particular, he's not against hunting. He's for conservation. And he noticed how, you know, how many deer are back there, you know, how many geese roost back there. I think that that's a good way to look at, like, the people that are somewhat in the middle. They're not hunters themselves. They're not going out and hunting themselves, because I can't tell
and
you.
That was a key point Buddy made earlier, is that not everybody has to be a hunter.
No, absolutely not. I mean, us as hunters and you know, as fishermen and outdoorsmen, we probably provide a lot of the support for a lot of this, like, clean, you know, making the environment clean, because for us to be able to continue to do this, we have to have the environment to be able to do it. You know, if they're building houses on where we usually hunt, we can't hunt there anymore. And, you know, so if the water's not clean, the salmon aren't going to go in the river, right? So I think that that conservationists can come from either side of the spectrum, whether they're hunters or fishermen, or they're people who like to take pictures of birds. You know, I don't think you necessarily...
I think that's a great way to say it.
I don't think you necessarily have to be somebody who wants... Like, my brother, for example, loves to hunt. My other brother loves to come and sit with us. He sits in the blind. He has no problem, you know, with us harvesting animals and using that meat to eat, and he'll eat it. But he just isn't the one that wants to pull the trigger.
The biggest problem I have is with the hypocrisy of those people who will go to the store and buy ground beef in a package and don't have and they are critical and against hunters, because I think part of the ethics of being a good conservationist and hunter is knowing where your meat is coming from and being a part of the tough part of it, which is taking a life and reducing it to its bag and then making that into something that ends up on the dinner table.
Well, I got to throw a Leopold line in here. He writes in his February essay, there are two dangers in not owning a farm. One is supposing that heat comes from the furnace, and the other is that breakfast comes from the grocery.
That's perfect.
Exactly.
That's exactly what we're talking about, buddy.
Yeah. And people are just disconnected from the natural world. And anybody who does care about it, as Jack is saying, you know, they get it. And they just want to be out there enjoying the outdoors. And I think that's where hunting, the hunting community can find new advocates and friends, is those that do care about the same things, but maybe don't want to partake. But at the same time, we also have lots more opportunities to recruit new hunters into the community.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Ian, you're squarely in Gen Z. You're 23 years old, right?
22? Yeah, 22.
22 years old. So you're squarely in Gen Z. Had you grown up and heard of Aldo Leopold?
Of course, yeah. So I'm actually an Eagle Scout.
Trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent.
Nailed it.
That's pretty good, isn't
that
it?
That is pretty good.
That surprised you?
I was a little shocked.
All right. I was a Life Scout, but then I discovered girls, and it was game over, and I didn't finish. One of the regrets, one of the main regrets I have in life, I never became an Eagle Scout. So, Ian, you had heard of Aldo Leopold. What did you think? What was your preconceived notion of Aldo Leopold?
Yeah, so they had actually taught us about Aldo Leopold in Boy Scouts when I was in high school. And basically just about how conservation-minded and he was and everything his organization stands for. And
Did you know he was a hunter?
I did not, actually.
See, that's what I mean. I've always seen the pensive, you know, philosophical-looking pictures of Aldo Leopold. I've never seen him with a stringer of geese or, you know, a lanyard of geese or a gun over his shoulder. So I think we are literally at a point that we can... This is the perfect symbiosis. We have folks who weren't necessarily hunters trying it for the first time for that organic, clean meat source. We've got conservationists who are combining their efforts with hunters now. This is the perfect time to bridge the gap and grow numbers in the outdoors in Wisconsin, get people to our state to experience, and get the folks off their phones, off their couches, and into the great outdoors. When we come back, you're going to hear the interview from our Illinois snow goose hunt, and then stick around because we're going to wrap things up here with Buddy Huffaker, Ian Kittrell, and Jack Klobuchar. You're listening to Raised in Wisco. Baggies back, still stacking plaques, still action packed. And dope, I keep it flipping like acrobats. That's why I pack a Mac, that'll crack a back. Cause on my waist is more heat than the Shaq attack. But I ain't speaking about bowling, just thinking about brawling till y'all start bawling. We all in together now, birds of a feather now.
Damn pretty girl, you ain't done it again. You're gonna turn it sexy all the way up to 10. I never seen a side ride seat looking so hot. Baby, you rock, hit the spot like a fireball shot. You got me all high head spinning around and around. I'm down if you're down to burn down this town. Ready, set, let's roll. Ready, set, let's ride. Get your little fine ass on the step, shimmy up inside. And slide, girl, by my side, girl.
Welcome back to Raised in Wisco. I'm your host, Joel Clayfish. You can hear us on any civic media station throughout the great state of Wisconsin, broadcasting on 13 stations now everywhere from Kenosha all the way up to Superior. You know, we do a lot and talk about how great the great state of Wisconsin is for outdoors, sports, anything you want to do, hunting, fishing, sideways, banana, kayaking, whatever you want to call it. It's all fun, but today we're taking the crew on the road, hitting the middle of Illinois. Now, I'm going to tell you something that's absolutely crazy to me. We slam the Canadas up there, no doubt. I mean, I'm helping my buddy Ian Kittrell, and we get a pretty good lock hold on the Canadas throughout Wisconsin. You know, we got more Great Lakes in Wisconsin than any other state per capita. We got the Mississippi River, the Great Lakes, and Canada goose hunting is fantastic. But we don't get snows. I mean, we get snows from time to time. In fact, Ian is with me in the studio right now, in our mobile studio in the middle of a cornfield. Ian, how rare is it that we get snows in Wisconsin?
Very, very, very sparingly. We are lucky to see maybe a dozen in every fall. I think our best year personally was we were able to harvest two, and we were lucky just to get two.
And I've actually never shot one in Wisconsin, but here's the craziest thing.
You can drive 4 hours south to Illinois. Yes, I know. We got our rivalries. It's all right. Go Pack. It's cool. But in Illinois, they get a snow goose migration just 4 hours south of where we're sitting when we're doing the broadcast out of the fishbowl in Waukesha. It's hard to believe, but one of the cool things is all you have to do is travel 4 hours south and you're going to see hundreds, if not thousands, of snows in the bean, in the cornfields. I mean, they're sitting on water down here, giant rafts of them by the thousands. And it's unlike anything you can imagine because we just don't get it in Wisconsin. Riley Ham's an outfitter down here and he's taking us out today. We're literally sitting in the middle of thousands of snow geese spread right now. We've shot 10 already today, which to me is considered a banner day, really. Riley, explain to me why on earth we see like zero snows, but you get to Illinois and all of a sudden there's thousands of them. What's going on with the migration and why are they avoiding Wisconsin and ending up here?
Well, they migrate traditionally to the south in the fall down to their wintering grounds and they're following the grain belt. As they come back up, they follow the chain of lakes from, you know, northeast Arkansas coming up, and then they bounce over in the southern Illinois, and they come up to Carlisle, and they used to follow the powerhouses, but we don't have any of them anymore. So they're still doing that traditionally, and they've got their spots where they winter, and they come up through here, follow the rivers, and we're actually in one of the biggest areas for where they hold up and they stage here for sometimes even in the winter. They'll winter here even on warm winters, and there is a chain of lakes here on this river that sometimes we peak up to 1.5 to 2 million birds, our peak numbers. So they it's incredible. It's the skies are white, and when you're here on those big days when we're peaked out, it's just absolutely amazing. Today we're sitting here and we're at the bottom of the migration, and we're waiting for the younger birds because the adult birds push first. So we're waiting for the younger birds that are at the tail end of the migration, and we're waiting for midday migrators. There's not a lot of birds around here right now. There's probably 100,000 in the area, but there's you pretty much, if you see some geese, you got a pretty good chance of killing them because they're younger. But yeah, the flyway through here is just incredible. The lakes and the grain here has got them.
It's pretty much to a pinch point is pretty much where we're at.
And I got to tell you, what's so unbelievable to me is this operation is absolutely insane. I mean, I'm going to throw some pictures up so you guys can check it out on our Facebook page and check out the Civic Media Facebook page to see the pictures. But these guys have got an operation down here where you're sitting in pit blinds. You're literally under the ground in pit blinds, and there are thousands of full body decoys. I mean, you can't take a step without bumping into them. And this is a completely professional operation. You just show up in the morning. These guys take you out to the pit. They're running their e-collars. They've got, you know, lucky ducks, flying flappers, and then hand flags as well. It's super exciting. I mean, you guys are doing this like full time. This is your not just your job, but your life. And we got the Wiz with us today, who's a snow goose hunter from way back. He's within like 15 years of my age, so he's got some experience doing this. Wiz, what makes a guy say, I'm going to guide hunting? Because that is one of the toughest things out there in the outdoor industry is to guide hunting, because when people pay for a hunt, they expect to kill stuff. You got your lulls, you got your strong, you know, days, but man, that's tough, and you guys love it that much that you're literally out here every day. We're all wearing white, but let me tell you, their white is more brown than white because of the work they put in and the mud and the guts and the sweat and the tears and the blood and everything like that. What makes a guy like you say, this is going to be my life?
You know, you really got to love it. You have to love what you do, and the work is very rewarding once you start to get really good at it. And every time you hunt these birds, you really got to learn something from it. There's always a takeaway. Good days, bad days, 100 bird days, 0 bird days, 50s, in between. There's something to learn every day with these birds because they're constantly evolving, and so are we as hunters. So it's really rewarding to chase these birds as much as we do. And for me, it's from September until May, truly.
I'm going to ask a question that I don't think a lot of people ask of guides or outfitters. Now, you know, if you listen to the show, you know that I guide and outfit hog and alligator hunts in Florida, right? You guys, we talk a lot about the fowl life on the show and the traveling we do to hunt. But a question that I always get for guides and outfitters that I think people are afraid to ask is, how much does the clients that you take affect your hunt for that day? I mean, clients come out, they can have a good attitude, a bad attitude, they can have expectations that may or may not be met or sometimes exceeded. But how much does the client, the folks that you're taking out hunting, how does that affect you as a guide and an outfitter, Riley?
Well, I'll tell you what, I've had terrible 100 bird shoots, absolutely terrible. And I've had great days where I've killed 10. I mean, absolutely just awesome days. It's really the guys in the field that makes the hunt. If you don't enjoy spending time with the guys, a lot of guys I have are return guys because we have a great time, even if we don't kill a bunch of geese. You know, hunting is hunting. You can't say you're going to go shoot 100 birds every day. But a good group of guys makes a great hunt, and you know, that's what I like. You know, you get a bunch of guys that are just clowning around and they're not hunters, and it kind of spoils the day for us because we're serious about it. This is why we're here. I mean, we love and enjoy it, and we're out here to have fun and to shoot geese. And you know, you get guys out here sometimes that just they're just here for the show and want to say they did it, but they don't want to do it. They don't want to, you know, they don't want to do the work or, you know.
I think you just hit that on the head. And I got to tell you, what gets lost so often is that people forget that, number one, we're in the greatest country in the world. And we have the ability to get out there and take food from the field and put it on the table, harvest it, you know, be a provider for your family. And I think when you're going to go hunting, I don't believe in coincidences, and I believe that your attitude actually does affect the hunt. And I also feel like that if you're going to spend your money and your time and your resources to enjoy the great outdoors this country has to offer, have a good attitude about it. Because when you get out there and you're just going to be sitting sulk in a corner, or, oh, I didn't get to shoot that, or, oh, my buddy shot that instead of me, enjoy the experience. First of all, hunting is a team sport. I tell people that all the time. And it's what the group does. It's not what an individual does. And I think too often people put so much pressure on themselves and forget what it's really about. I mean, we're out here in February. It's 65 degrees, absolutely beautiful. I think Ian's getting like the first suntan of his life. And we're just enjoying ourselves. We had some goose burritos in the blind this morning. We're going to eat some venison hot dogs. We're eating well. I might even take a nap later. What do you think, Wiz?
Oh, absolutely. Midday nap is key sometimes this time of year, especially when it's in the 70s, sun's out, guns out.
Hey, tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you if they're interested in a snow goose hunt here in Illinois.
Illinois hunts are brought to you by my dad, Rick Ham, and this operation is called Show Me Your Snows, and his phone number is 309-635-5200. If not, you can find him on Facebook at Show Me Your Snows Outdoors. I think Show Me Your Snows Extreme Snow Goose Hunting is what it is, or find him on Facebook at Rick Ham, and we'll take care of you on that Facebook. So,
well, I got to tell you, I appreciate it already. It doesn't, you know, I fired the gun a couple times. I'm not sure I hit anything, but I'm having a fantastic time with these guys. They're good guys. Most people who are outfitting and doing this as a lifestyle are doing it because they love it that much. And what you never have to question on a hunt like this is how hard they're trying for you. Believe me when I tell you, there's no outfitter who takes you out who's not going to do everything they can for you to have the most successful hunt. But the success of that hunt is going to be largely in part to what your attitude is. And when you're out here with these guys who are putting their life, heart, and soul into it, just enjoy it. We got bluegill out here. His buddy Paul. Zach's shooting some video. Connor's drifting off, checking out the decoys on the edge over there. We just got a great group of guys. Porky, who guides out here, is along with us today. We brought him for just his keen shooting ability, I think. Yeah, I'm not sure yet. Entertainment. I think he's got like a turkey choke in his gun, so we'll see. But Ian Kittrell, thanks again for setting this up and helping us get down here to Illinois. We're going to head back to the greater state of Wisconsin later tonight after we're done. But we've got 10 birds on the ground already, and it's been fantastic. And this is the kind of thing we talk about on Raised in Wisco, and this is why we show you so many different ways to get into the outdoors and talk so much. You know, I tell people this is a cooking show at the end of the day. And so we're going to talk about what we end up doing with these snows. We're going to make some cooking segments with them. They'll show up on the Fowl Life Instagram, the Fowl Life YouTube, and of course, Provider Instagram, YouTube, and Provider TV. I don't even know what I'm going to make with snow, but it's got to have something in it that has a good word, you know, to be able to use the word snow, I think. Snow cuisine. Anyway, we'll be right back. What an awesome day and great segment. You're listening to Raised in Wisco with your host Joel Playfish. That's me and Danielle Fairman. We'll be right back after this break.
Ready, set, let's roll. Ready, set, let's ride. Get your little fine ass on the step. Shimmy up inside this slide, girl. By my side, girl. Yeah, we can run this town. I can rock your world. We can roll them down, pop them up, cruise around, get stuck. Pedal to the metal till the sun comes up. Run this town tonight.
Set. Let's roll.
Kick it!
Welcome back to Raised in Wisco. I'm your host, Joel Clayfish. Danielle Fairman's got the night off. She's at the Ducks Unlimited banquet, which is awesome, and I can't wait to hear about it on next week's show. Listen to us on your civic media station everywhere from down south in the Beloit, Kenosha area all the way up to Hayward, Wisconsin, and everywhere in between Green Bay, Eau Claire, Madison, Waukesha. We are currently in the fishbowl at WAUK in Waukesha, where I got my very first start in media at 15 years old, working for WAUK as the board op and weekend weather person. I think I made $3.12 an hour.
So, not much has changed.
Nah.
Sorry, I know you didn't ask. But
Anya, God bless you for all you do. Working hard there. And you hear that, guys? Anya deserves a raise. That's just my opinion. That's what I'm saying. She keeps it together for all of us. We got Buddy Huffaker, president of the Aldo Leopold Foundation. That last segment you heard was our interview down south in Illinois, a snow goose hunting. What a fun time that was. Ian Kittrell dragged me kicking and screaming down there to not at all. I was so excited about it. And it turned out to be everything we hoped for. We got 33 geese. I made my standard wild goose, shredded wild goose. I made an Italian bomber sandwich for Buddy before we got over here.
Delicious.
It was. Anybody who says goose is gross, they're out of their mind, aren't they?
They haven't had your sandwiches.
Well, I appreciate it. It's pretty simple. It's a pretty simple recipe, and I do share it quite a bit. But for those of you listening out there, you know I always say this is a cooking show at the end of the day. One of the things we had talked about before the Illinois boys did their interview was that there was this disconnect between generations about what Aldo Leopold as a person really stood for, what motivated him. And at as we found out, as we know about him in his writings, you know, a lot of people know Aldo Leopold's a guy they've named bridges and parks and roads after throughout Wisconsin. But he was the founder of combining conservation with utilization of the outdoors. That's kind of how I would say it.
Well said.
Yeah, he's kind of the godfather of that. We heard from Ian, who's squarely in Gen Z, who's heard of Aldo Leopold, had a little bit of an idea of who he was. But did it surprise you to learn that he was a hunter and harvesting? He was a waterfowl hunter, a deer hunter, and harvesting game and taking it to the table was such a large part of who he was?
Yeah, I mean, they never really taught that to me when I was in Boy Scouts. It was more so just the conservation side. I didn't really know that he was a hunter.
So what's the answer? I mean, Jack, you asked it during the break. What is the answer to get those people off the couch, away from the video games, off of their phones, and into the outdoors? Because I'm going to ask Buddy the same question, but what do we do? How do we drag them kicking and screaming into actual three-dimensional real life versus the bologna sausage that's packed on a cell phone?
Yeah, I mean, I think just like anything, if someone doesn't want to do it, they're not going to do it. So the key, I think, is finding people that are open-minded to the idea. And I think another really important thing is not forcing them to pull the trigger right away. I think that's something that a lot of people overlook. Because
and you don't mean pull the trigger metaphorically. I mean literally, shoot a gun.
You know, because I know for a fact, you know, when I was young, we had a lot of friends that hunted. I mean, Ian, I'm sure you're the same way. And we, you know, every once in a while someone came in who didn't hunt. And I think sometimes that is overwhelming. Taking the life of an animal, you know, as we know it, is really providing meat for your family, providing food and conserving. But for a lot of people, that's a big moment. So
it's
traumatic. And so I think that's something that's really important is not putting the pressure on that person that you're bringing for the first time to pull the trigger right away.
That's key. People, and I'm going to say this, and I'm really excited to talk about this for just a second. Pulling the trigger on a gun, an explosion happens in the chamber with gunpowder and a projectile. It is about 140 decibels loud, and then that bullet breaks the sound barrier. That's about another 130 decibels that combine with each other. It's a loud, a violent shock against your shoulder. It is, in some cases, painful if you don't have that gun rested the proper way. So that is something to be strongly considered that somebody should do when they're mentally prepared for it. Right now on the governor's desk in Madison is the bill to allow air guns for hunting big game in Wisconsin. We were excited. I worked with the Safari Club International, you know, the game preserve associations, and we fought and got that bill through both houses. I think things like that help. And Buddy, you know, as a person who runs a leading organization in the outdoors for hunters, anglers, conservationists, the silent sport users, you know, is Jack on the right track with what we need?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I started hunting late in life. I was 30 before I started hunting. And I think that's what we're really talking about now. Whether you're 30 or 13, you're probably coming from an environment where you didn't grow up hunting. You're not used to handling firearms. And so kind of working through each of those pieces for people is important. And the real important thing is just to be out in the field, sitting with and experiencing what a hunt looks like from start to finish and all of the glory that's there beyond the actual kill. And I think that's where the real opportunity is to recruit people, is to just have them experience the thoughtfulness, the intentionality, and the beauty of the whole experience.
I think that is something that's not talked about enough in the debate over hunting, in the explanation and education of hunting, is hunting is not killing. That is not the same thing. Hunting is hearing all of the different birds waking up in the morning. There is no, look, I hate getting up early. I'm going to be the first. I'm a night hawk. I hate getting up early. I loathe getting up early. But there is nothing better in the world than listening to the woods wake up. And I've had experiences doing that in the United States, in Spain, in France. I mean, you listen to the woods wake up, you know, the Sherwood Forest wake up in Great Britain, and you hear the muntjac and roe deer barking in the morning. I mean, there are things you will hear when the woods wakes up that is the most incredible. And there are people who are always sleeping through the sunrise. And the experience out there, and I know Anastasia's had some experiences this past year camping and in the outdoors. Some things that are a little bit maybe newer to her, but there is something out there that's kind of, Anastasia, wouldn't you say it's kind of inexplicable until you actually experience it?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. The outdoors are definitely something you have to experience, and going camping this year was a lot of new experiences, and I might even do it again.
Well, see? And that's what I'm talking about. I mean, Anastasia's generation, you know, Jack's generation, Ian's generation, this is something that many of them have never even experienced. And of course, we got 8 million things to talk about, and the show's over already. It goes so fast. What a great show. Thanks to Buddy Huffaker, president of Aldo Leopold, Ian Kittrell, and Jack Klobuchar, my pro staffer from The Foul Life. We'll catch you next week with Danielle Fairman. I'm Joel Clayfish. This is Raised in Wisco.